this the Birds?
It is. But whose song is it?
Dylan?
Dylan. Wake up. Wake up.
Oh, excuse me. We're already talking.
We're on the air.
Good deal. I'm Bo Mitchell.
Bob Belt.
And this is You Get the Blessing. We put on music like this every week because one guy in Denver told us he likes the music.
Yeah, it's usually something that will get you out of bed and going this morning. So
who am I thinking of? David, what's his name that's in this group?
Crosby.
Oh, yeah. Is he one of the Birds?
Yeah.
High Parker.
Probably.
Took it right out of scripture.
Nobody cares what we're talking about, you know.
Yes, they do. People want to hear about the Birds. What, you know, you find
like antique music now.
You know? No, this we had the best music.
It was.
I had the 50s with my older brother, Buddy Holly, Elvis, the Everly Brothers. Then we had the 60s. The Beatles show up, the Beach Boys, the Stones. And since then, it's dropped off.
That just shows, you know. It just shows that, like, it's beyond us. It's,
okay, so you're going to have to hear this before we introduce our guest today.
Okay.
My wife, Gary, and I were at spring training with my work I do with the Rockies. And at one of the Indian casinos near our complex, Burt Bacharach was performing.
Really?
And I got two tickets because no one else wanted to go with us. And he shuffled on the stage, 85 years old, and I said to Gary, this might have been a mistake. And then he started speaking very softly and said, kind of like, we're going to start with a medley of my top hits. And that went for about 30 minutes. And the guy, he didn't sing the songs he wrote. So once he got on the piano,
yeah,
you couldn't tell. 85 years old and still cooking. It made me proud of the guy for still out there performing.
We've got a few good years left.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm now, turning 65 this year, so I'm paying
compared to our guest today who has many years left. So.
Man, our guest is Nathan Sanford. He's a co-pastor of New Song Church, and he looks like a dadgum
linebacker
for the Broncos. So, Nathan, welcome.
Thank you.
Were you a football player?
You know, I wasn't. I was actually a bodybuilder for many years.
That's not surprising. It shows.
You know, yeah, I considered going, you know, competing and doing that as my thing, and then I realized it was really hard. So
well, if this small t-shirt you're wearing is to intimidate me, it's doing it.
I figured I had to do something to intimidate somebody, and you know,
that's right. He's got his radio arms on today.
Exactly.
You know, one day at spring training, I don't mind telling this story, but you've seen me do this act belts, but Walt Weiss, our manager, said, you know, if Kirk Gibson is going to throw at our hitters, they just hit to Lewicki intentionally. you know, game on kind of. And I stood up and rolled up my sleeves. And, I mean, I got scrawny basketball arms. And I said, I'm here to back you up, Kirk Gibson. If he wants some of this, he can come over here and get it. And Walt shook his head with a smile and said, that's intimidating. But we had a good laugh.
All right.
So it probably helps having a big build in the ministry you're doing.
You know, I would say it does, actually, when you're working with teenagers, and especially the ones I've worked with now and have in the past, is, you know, these are kids, a lot of them from the streets and from some really, really hard backgrounds. And you know, some of them come in thinking they're pretty tough, and you know, they
find, see the pastor and think twice.
You know, well, I think it kind of gives them a good perspective of, because their paradigm for pastor or for, you know, religious guy or however you want to look at it is not me. So I think it changes just with a brief conversation, I think, with some of them. I think that's a good thing.
Or just a first glance, even.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Nathan Sanford, tell us your story. Where are you from, and what was it like around your place growing up?
Oh, it was interesting. I was actually born in Pasadena, California, and my dad was actually going to seminary at Fuller Seminary. And it was interesting growing up. We moved from there when I was about maybe 5 years old, so I have some fleeting memories of kind of living in a really bad part of town. And we moved from there to this redneck North Idaho backwoods town basically. And it was an interesting experience because it was very, you know, very conservative. The churches that were there were very, very conservative. If there weren't very many of them. And, you know, my dad came along and he was charismania, crazy guy, you know, with the speaking.
Charismania. I've never heard the term.
So speaking in tongues and, you know, the guitars and the drums, which at that time was, sort of like, I don't know, scandalous. And so it was interesting.
Early innovator or early adopter.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you were called Sanford and Son.
You know what? It's funny because only your generation knows that. You say it now, the youth go, what is that? You know? But it was interesting because it's small test, 5,000 people in the town. So it was, you know, kind of one of those towns where everybody knows everybody's business. And I was the preacher's kid. And so my experience in church wasn't very good. We actually planted it literally in a barn where I remember as a kid shoveling manure out of the barn so we could have our first service in this barn that, you know, smelled like poop for 6 years later, I think. And it was interesting. So I grew up in this town where I was a preacher's kid and I hated church. You know, as the last place I wanted to go, these like mean people, you know. So, and they were weird people too, you know, because we were the charismatics and they were doing this crazy stuff. And as a kid, I just like, I want to go home and play Mario Brothers, you know, like get me out of here.
So you weren't quite buying into either side of it, the mean people coming or the charismatic nuts putting on the service.
Yeah, I didn't buy any of it. I said, I want to go play ball, you know, get me out of this place. And so it wasn't particularly good. And I think my father and I had a bit of a disconnect, which, you know, we could talk about that later. I think it might be important for people to hear the father-son dynamic that happened, but we had a bit of a disconnect because I was very feeling and very, and my dad was very stoic and, you know, this is how it is. And I was just wasn't like that. So it was interesting growing up in that environment. We moved here to Denver. I was from that 5,000 person town in this little podunk church in a barn. And we built a building later, but we moved here to Denver and we were actually, my dad was the executive pastor at what then was the Denver Vineyard. So it's one of the largest churches here in town.
Was that Tom Stipes?
Yeah, that was Tom Stipes' church. Right. And so he was executive pastor just under Tom. Hmm. And so that was the first time I experienced like nice people like in church. I was like, wow, these people seem a lot happier than other people. It was very
different.
Where'd
this crowd come from?
Exactly. It's like, wow, maybe this Jesus thing. And, it's kind of like I always knew the Lord, I think. But I didn't really want anything to do with church or anything to do with what people said following God was about. And so I decided, I had a lot of really hard struggles as a teenager. And I hadn't talked to my dad for other than past the milk for probably like 10 years. And I'm living in the same house as he was at the time.
Did he know you were sick of him?
You know, I don't think he did. He was in pretty hardcore depression. I have classified him clinically depressed for a number of years. And so
that's what happens when you're a pastor, by the way.
Exactly.
These unhappy people make you even more unhappy.
That. Right, right.
Yeah, even if you have nice people.
Exactly. So I had a lot of, I just think I was an intense kid anyway. And so I graduated high school and I had this, didn't know what to do with my life. And so I actually wrote a suicide note and drove off to kill myself. And
no kidding.
Yeah, that was my plan. I just didn't see any point because I'd kind of done, in my 18-year-old mind, I'd done everything, and I didn't see any point to doing anything else because I'd done the church thing and done the sports thing, and I'd done everything. So I thought, well, this is it. If this is all there is to life, you just wake up, you try and make money, and you try and get ahead, and this is all it is, I'm done. I'm checking out.
So where'd you drive, and what happened?
I drove up Highway 36 there, you know, towards Estes Park, and my goal was to
find... Got to Boulder and thought, voila! Here it is!
Exactly. I found Nirvana! So, anyway, yeah, passed a couple of crazy people on the road and looking for a cliff to drive off of because I thought, as dramatic as I am, like, I better find a good way to die, you know?
Gotta have the right cliff under those circumstances.
Wow. Exactly. So I found this cliff, and I thought this is a good one, and I, with enough room, I could pull up and get enough velocity to kind of get out there. And so I pulled my car back, and I remember kind of, it was the first time I'd really prayed in a long time. And I sat my, and I said, God, you know, don't send me to hell. You know, cause I was really scared of that. Like, don't do that.
I don't mind going off this cliff.
Right, right.
But I don't want to spend eternity in hell.
Exactly.
Those are interesting thoughts back to back.
Yeah, they are. Well, my other thought was, please make sure I die and don't like just get injured. You know, that was another fear I had. So I was going to take off and I looked up and all of a sudden there was these like elk standing in my way. It literally scattered all over the front of the cliff or right in front of the cliff. And I thought, you know, I'm totally okay with killing myself, but I'm not going to kill a moose like that or an elk. That'd be really messed up. So I remember getting out of the car and thinking I'm going
to
shoot.
Yeah, because they could have gone to elk hell.
Yeah,
and
right.
That would have been really bad.
And that would have been on me. So I got out of the car and I'm trying to shoo them away. You know, I'm like, guys, get out of here. You know, and I'm mad at this point because they're not moving. I'm up right up in their faces, like literally yelling at an elk in the face. And going,
and they're not moving even
no,
when they.
No, no. And I saw.
Wouldn't an elk normally run away?
No. Absolutely. I mean,
so
I thought for sure.
These were elk angels.
You know, this is the only thing I could think of. I mean, I don't know what to label it, you know, 20 years later or whatever it is now. But at the time, I it just hit me. I fell down in the dirt next to this elk and I just started crying.
Wow.
And, you know, at that point, I figured, well, I guess God doesn't want me to die. And so I got my car and drove back home.
Drove over the elk and...
Yeah, exactly.
That is... So the elk just stood their ground.
Yeah.
And you just collapsed and
little
thought...
divine intervention
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, if it weren't for them, I certainly wouldn't be having this interview with y'all right now. Mm-hmm. So it was...
So how'd you pick up the pieces from there?
Well, I drove home and I remember my mom crying and my dad being really mad and... You know, and it was bad. And
you'd left a note.
I left a note.
Okay, all right,
right for so my mom because yeah. I didn't care about my dad. I hated yeah. him, but I love my mom, and I wanted to make sure that she like knew the reasons that it wasn't her. I guess yeah. is what I basically put in the note. And so anyway, it didn't really solve much of anything. It was a bad time. I launched into anything I could. I decided that anything but Christianity, anything but the God of the Bible, because I thought it's got to be better than what I know. So I went into Buddhism, I went to Taoism, I went into Shintoism for a little while. I went to a few Mormon churches, a couple Catholic masses. I hung out with the Hare Krishnas down on campus at Metro with the tambourines on the fingers, like the whole nine yards. I thought maybe they seemed pretty happy. You know, they were stoned all the time.
And you so and your dad.
I found out it wasn't so much that. It was more like the weed there was no.
You doubt. And your dad.
Orange was your favorite color.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You guys are just getting closer and closer, you and your father.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, my only thought was I started boxing a little at that time. And my thought was the only person I wanted to box was my old man. You know, which is. So I had this a lot of hate and anger and just frustration. And I didn't know what to do with it. And so I was looking at everything. I even hung out at that time. You know, growing up, you hear in the church like these mean gay people, and they're so horrible. So I started going to gay bars, not because I was gay, but because I wanted to see if they were these evil people that everyone told me they were. And so,
hang on just a second. Yeah. Let me reintroduce Nathan Sanford, our guest. You're hearing this incredible story about his life. So I wanted you to make sure you knew whose voice you were hearing, you listeners. He's the co-pastor of New Song Church and Ministries here in Denver. Quite a story. Keep going. Pardon the interruption.
So, oh, no problem. So I was going to the gay bars. Yeah, and I felt like I just wanted to make a difference. I wanted my life to be something other than make money, and which I wasn't very good at anyway, and doing this other stuff, you know, because I did everything that they told me was supposed to work. I call it magic words, you know, when you bow your head and I believe in Jesus and said my magic words, and that didn't help me either. So I thought something's got to be more out there. And so I ended up going to a few gay bars. And one of the things that actually rocked me was I was at this gay bar with a straight friend of mine, actually, and again, I just went there just to meet people. And I started talking to this guy. He was a young guy. He was probably, like, couldn't have been like 16, 17, something like that. And he started just sharing his life. And he was talking about the abuse he'd been through and this and that. And my whole heart just welled up with this love for him. And I thought, and he's collapsed in my arms. And I'm right in the middle of this bar. And I'm just hugging him and loving on him. And even now I'm like, oh, man, it was just the love of God that was flowing. Gosh, I'm sorry, was just the powerful. And I felt how much God loved this young man that never had a chance, that nobody gave him a chance. No one listened to him. And at that point, I felt something shift in me. Now, it was a seed planted, but it wasn't the end. I felt something in me like this, you know, because I was pretty sure that the world didn't get up until I woke up, you know. So at that point, I realized there's other people that have bigger problems than I do. But I still decided to walk it out. So I thought I would be a stripper at bachelorette parties and things like that. Because I had a buddy at the gym that was doing that, and he's making pretty good money. And I thought, well, you know, it's better than working it on the border, you know, which is where I was working as a waiter at the time in college.
These are subjects and things we don't know about, so we're reading education here. The thought of becoming a stripper never crossed my mind or Bob's mind.
Why not? You guys look great.
In fact, the fear of being de-pantsed by my older brother through elementary school is still haunting me.
Oh, my goodness. So I had this friend that was doing it, and so he was kind of trying to help me get into it and teaching me how to dance and you know, here's what you got to do and all this. And I think I had too much of a conscience. I couldn't actually do that. So I thought maybe I would go to spring break with MTV, which I did, in South Padre Island, Texas, and for spring break. And this is probably 97. So spring break was a really big thing at that time in the late 90s, and thought I would be one of these on stage dancer stripper guys. And
hang on just a second, Lori Lynn, get ready with the pause button because we don't know where this is going next.
Gotta delete.
This could drift.
This is a live show.
Yeah, this could drift somewhere we don't want it to go, and it costs me $250 every edit. So.
Oh, nice.
All right, so you're stripping now, and where are you?
Here. So in South Padre Island, Texas. And it became clear, it's a long story, we don't have time for it now, but I was kind of like the Jonah on, and we were driving this 83 Cadillac, you know, to get down there. Then I had a couple of buddies of mine that were, you know, into the spring break scene, and it was clear that I was the Jonah, like, get me out of this car. Like, our car caught on fire, literally the engine caught on fire. I don't know, a whole bunch of crazy things happened. Our hotel broke down. And when I broke down, I mean the water seeped in from the ocean through the floor. And it was coming up through the floor. And I was sleeping on the floor. So we got kicked out of the hotel. And we ended up breaking into somebody's house and sleeping on the floor of this trailer that we broke into. So we have a place to stay. This guy got kicked out of the hotel. We didn't want to sleep on the beach. I mean, it was just on and on. It became clear that this wasn't not what God had for me. And actually took a call from my grandfather. I got home from that crazy trip, and I was sitting in my room, and I had like this demonic attack, which is the first time I ever experienced anything like that. I was actually totally awake, and I saw this little demon. I didn't know what it was at the time, kind of floating in front of me, and I couldn't talk and I couldn't speak, and I was sort of frozen, and it was hitting me, like floating in and out of me. And it was very, very painful. And I looked in the doorway, and there was this huge cloaked demon that looked like the riders from Lord of the Rings, is the best way I can describe it. And he looked like he was having a good time. And I didn't know what to do. And I remember my parents saying...
And you weren't on drugs at this
time? No. I was stone cold sober, and I wasn't... I was reading a book. I was halfway asleep, but I was still awake. And this happened, and I started just not knowing what to do. I remember my parents said, just say, in Jesus' name, go away, you know, if you want this to happen. I thought, I can't talk. I was frozen. I was like trying to say it, and I couldn't say anything. And so I heard this voice in my head, and now I know it was Holy Spirit at the time. I just thought I was going crazy. It said, just think the name. And so I thought in my head, in Jesus' name, go away. And this thing just went, poof, disappeared. And the thing in the doorway just took a step out. And now I'm like, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm freaking out. I ran out of the room, scream at the top of my lungs, in the street, in the front of my house, in my boxers. Luckily, it was summer.
And back my mom, to the stripper
zone. Yeah, right, exactly. Sorry, we keep coming back to that. My mom came running out, and, you know, what is going on? And at that point, I felt like this thing, I felt like God just met me, and I just was so done with everything. And I thought back to that kid that just collapsed in my arms, and I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to make a difference. I want to reach kids that nobody else wants to touch. I want to reach the kids that everyone thinks is dirty. I want to reach the kids that no one cares about. No one wants to be around. The kids that aren't pretty, you know, the kids that don't grow churches, you know, those are the kids that I want coming to my church. And
now you got them.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting road there too. I actually wanted to leave my dad's church and plant my own ministry. And at this point I had a bachelor's degree in psychology, and I was working on a master's, and I went to Denver Seminary. And ended up, got my master's from Denver Seminary after that whole thing and got all that done. And I wanted to kind of leave. And then my dad actually approached me. And at the time, you know, our church at the time was like maybe 120 adults or something like that. It wasn't very big. I mean, it was a little church. And there's only like 4 youth in the church. And the youth pastor left. And my dad approached me and said, hey, you know, I talked to the board, and we want to hire you. for, you know, nothing basically to come and to be our youth pastor. And I prayed about it and I knew it was the Lord, even though I didn't want it to be because I wanted to do my own thing, but I felt like it was God. And so I said yes. And I came on, and right when I came on, just amazing things began to happen. We had all kinds of, the youth group grew to about 50 kids or so, and it was really cool. And people were giving their lives to the Lord, and it was powerful. And I took them on trips, and we went around to these really neat things, and in our 125 member church, and we had 50 youth coming every week, and it was pretty cool. And during that time, I was able to, my dad and I made this connection, and we built this father-son thing, which we hadn't ever really had before.
Good.
And he repented to me, and I repented to him, and we ended up in tears in each other's arms, just repenting to one another for what we had done to each other, and who we hadn't been for one another. And it was a great thing. And at that point, God said, "Do you want the big thing?" And I'm like, "I don't know, because I've seen your power, and I do want it, but I'm kind of scared." And he said, "Okay, you're going to have to go lower." And I don't know. It's a long story. We don't have time to tell it, but my heart just shattered even more than I thought. He said, "If you want to win people, you got to go lower. You got to go lower. And the kids that you want, in order to get them, you got to go as low as you can go." And so I said, "All right." And he broke my heart. I can't describe it other than I just was shattered. I cared about nothing except for winning young people and loving my Jesus, you know. And that's all I cared about. And he just shattered my heart. And so it was shortly after 2003, God said, "I think you're ready now, because you can handle this mantle." And within, between 2003 and 2004, we went from 50 to 200 youth coming just at our weekly service, our Thursday night service. And this is still in a church of 150 adults. We're running 200 plus youth at our youth meeting. And then we ended up having even more than that. So I had 5 meetings a week for youth, broke it all up so that I could disciple kids. I was probably working 70 hours a week, just hanging out with youth, because I needed to disciple them. These are kids from the streets. I'd have altar calls with big trash cans, not like the little ones, big trash cans, and it would fill with needles and all kinds of sacks. I mean, meth, crank, whatever. I mean, name it, shrooms, like filling up these kinds of things. It was just a crazy time, and so many kids came to the Lord. And then at that point, we saw... I got a warning actually from my grandfather. He said, "You're breaking through in the kingdom in places where this are so dark, and these kids are coming. These are hardcore kids. I can't even explain. I had prostitutes, girls are 15, 16 year old prostitutes coming to the Lord, and drug dealers coming to the Lord. And I mean, you name it. I still want a few of them still come to our church now today. In fact, quite a number of our young adults in our church now." And so he said, "The enemy doesn't like this. Like, you're going to get attacked." And a couple years later, I had a girl named Jackie, sweet, beautiful girl. She was kind of a spiritual daughter to my wife and I. We didn't have kids at that time. I have 4 now, but we didn't at that time. And so we kind of adopted her, and she was from a really broken home. And I got a call one night, and they said, "Jackie's dead." I said, "What do you mean?" And she had hung herself in her dad's closet with the belt that he used to beat her with. And I never experienced that kind of pain before. And we had 2 other suicides in the youth group shortly after that. I never had experienced that loss, that kind of level of loss. And so it just really broke me, and it hurt a lot of the kids. And it kind of messed up what God was doing. And I was young. I mean, I was really young then, and even dumber than I am now. And I did not know how to deal with any of it. I just didn't know how to process it. And so, you know, we lost a lot. And now God has basically taken us back to square one and asked me the same question again. Do you want to go lower? Because if you go lower, I'll give you the lowest, which is where I am. And I said, "Okay, you know, I'll do that." And
wow. So where is your church located in town?
It's 8242 Pecos. So it's not in the greatest part of town. If you drove past it, you would not think anything of it. It's a couple of blocks.
What's the racial mix?
It's pretty racially diverse, I would say. I mean, we have all creeds and colors and all different kinds of people. I mean, people that were drug addicts that are worshiping alongside, you know, people that own businesses and that kind of a thing. And it's very ethnically diverse.
And how can listeners come and hear you preach? And
if you want, we have 10 o'clock services on Sunday. And we also have a 6 o'clock on Sunday night. That's more of a small service. But if you wanted to hear me, I lead worship badly. And you're welcome to come. Hear that too. People seem to like it, but I never can figure out why.
New Song Church and Ministries.
New Song Church and Ministries, and at 10 o'clock Sunday morning, if you want to come, down to our church. It's a very opening, open, welcome place with some really loving people.
It's quite a story, isn't it?
Great story. And we really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll have you back and kind of pick up from there.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
So anything new coming up? Summer months that are you excited about?
Well, I'm taking kids. I like to take kids on trips and that kind of a thing. And so we're going to take kids to a conference in Kansas City, going to take maybe 20 youth or so down there. And we always get impacted because I like taking these kids that most of them have never been on family vacation and their only memories are with me, you know, taking them out to to do what to them would be a kind of family vacation. And so
could people help pay for that if they wanted to?
I would love if people help pay for that, because again, our church is still not a very big church, so we don't have a lot of finances. Everything I raised on my own.
How do they get a hold of you?
If you want to call our church, 303-430-8100, you can call our
go
church
slower
directly.
On that.
Oh, sorry, 303-430-8100. And right now we're trying to raise about $6,000 to get kids over there for a week. And if anyone has a van, if you'd like to give us a van, I would love to have a van, like a 12, 15 passenger van to help pick kids up. I was using a 76, Suburban. Is the world's ugliest car ever. And,
kids didn't even want to get in it.
I've had one.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So, you know, and so finally God had me give that away to another ministry. And so we gave that away a number of years ago. And so now I don't have any kind of transportation to pick kids up or take them on trips. And it would be nice to have that.
So the name of the church is New Song Church. You've been listening to Nathan Sanford. So Bob and I will give the first $1,000 on that $6,000 you need to raise.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome. So somebody that's listening, match my $1,000. In fact, double it, will you? Because Bob and I, if you'll double it, then we won't give anything.
Wow,
Nathan, you're a great guy.
So are you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Paul.
Good morning, Bo. A good morning.
Thanks for tuning in. See you guys next week. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to be, to everything.